There's got to be an explanation to all these UFO sightings, right? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
This podcast is sponsored by Hollywood Casino in Charlestown, West Virginia. April's featured entertainment includes Los Lobos on the 12th, Josh Turner on the 13th, and The Steel Woods on the 26th. Details and tickets at HollywoodCasinoCharlestown.com. Must be 21 to enter the casino floor and attend a show. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Welcome to the newest episode of Beyond the Fame with Jason Fraley. I'm your host, Jason Fraley, picking the brains of the top filmmakers, musicians, and artists of our time. Today marks the 45th anniversary of The Deer Hunter winning the Oscar for Best Picture on April 9th, 1979. I spoke with actor John Savage in 2020 when he starred in the CBS series SEAL Team, while also reflecting on the legacy of The Deer Hunter, where he acted alongside Robert De Niro, Christopher Walken, and Meryl Streep.
Hey, Jason.
Hey. Thanks so much for joining us. Now, where are we calling you from?
I'm in West Hollywood right now. I moved again. We had some big fires out here 2 years ago and lost our place in a fire up in Malibu. It's no joke, you know. We don't want to talk about climate change, but the specific, you know, stuff going on in our world today is a lot of eventful things with people, places, and things. And I started to brag about my being able to be on one of many great shows that are going on with television and the expansion of real human stories. And for me, it brought the SEAL team to, you know, and issues of service and stuff I grew up around with that around me as a kid, post-Second World War and Korean War vets coming home and men and women, you know, going through a lot of just changes in their lifestyle from First World War and depression and then going into the service in the Second World War. And I remember my grandpa being brought home from the Bowery. He had gone there after service in France and raised them, coming home to raise the kids by himself. My aunts and uncles all went in the military, Second World War. He said, you know, I'm not going to stick around to see what happens. I don't know if he said that, but he went to the Bowery to die pretty much after his service in France. But my dad brought him to live with us, and it was an experience of real beautiful old gentleman. Everybody in my dad's family were athletes, but they all drank. They had rough lives, but all good people. They drank heavy and, you know, there's just there was a gentlemanly attitude among a lot of the vets and my youth and men coming together just to be supportive, and the women too. And they had the GI Bill, which gave them a few more motivations, just a few bucks to buy a home. And I watched neighborhoods go from big empty fields to actually getting a little house. As a little boy, I remember around 4 or 5 years old, just those big steps and the little gatherings of people afterwards, and drinking and smoking was a big deal in the 50s. And also just dealing with a lot of emotional stuff, like nightmares with big tough guys like my dad. And my grandpa apparently went through a lot of that. And just the adjustment of 6'8" Marine. And, you know, he was in the Corps Pacific and coming 2 a.m. and pulling himself up to his full height, go out and looking for work maybe, or dealing with the community was a thing. I saw a lot of, it was all Republicans, very involved with the communities and civil rights at that time and service. You know, they all everybody had experiences, and these men got together in the corner of the room a lot. And I always wondered what they were talking about. But just the idea of support, you know, maybe a little emotional stuff going on, but men coming back, they all look the same age from Korean service. And, you know, a drink in the hand and that quiet kind of just community of support. And those moments that were small in our film, you know, our TV representing great images of service over in the Middle East. I mean, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, all these guys going through years of service. Some of them not doing well. I mean, A.J. Buckley was incredible as a character, and I was so grateful to work with him as a dad and him coming home, back to his home area. And just a few little moments he had, you know, very personal, but such a real image of just, you know, how much people have going on in their life experience and how important and hard, how difficult sometimes just to relate to their own issues with their family or friends, you know, how great it was for him to meet his old girlfriend, or young girlfriend anyway, Rachel Boston, played Hannah, and A.J. Buckley, Sonny Quinn. I was his dad, Emmett Quinn. And then what happened between us years ago? He split, you know. He lost his mom. I lost my wife. And issues, you know, as we have a phrase, issues, pass me the tissues. These guys, they had to face some things together, and then they realized how much they love each other. This little family of her relationship with him years earlier, this was home. But he also had a tremendous commitment with his service. I mean, he was living with another family. And like the star, Jason Hayes, the actor, I mean, the character, Jason, David Boreanaz, is just incredible with his ability to take on a real different character than he played earlier, as far as a very, on his other show, a very cerebral, almost humorous, you know, intelligence operative, what he was doing with that. But this one was definitely blood and guts. And his experiences with that crew he was with, his squad, just incredible differences in personalities, but incredible commitment. And they lost people, and he lost people. And that time of service can happen in a couple of weeks or months or days. And he was there for years with some of these guys. And meeting a lot of different people and becoming close to a lot of different elements in the social aspect. And as an American and in different parts of the world with people really, really being affected and looking up to in many ways and respecting and wanting what we have to offer and at the same time wanting what they want for their world. And this is like our world today, even in our own country today. We're really facing the need for understanding, you know, and communication. And we see the violent reactions and also tremendously strong efforts by younger people, in my mind, just to come together and want to come together to take steps forward, you know, together. And a lot of times we don't know. We just have to show support, like those quiet times with those vets coming together in my house as a kid. I know that was tough to get a job. A lot of times the job was hard to hold. You're going through stuff where people are different than the ones you've been serving with. In the real world, as much as you want to be a part of it, it's not always easy. And we're dealing with it today. You know, whether we're sharing experiences at home or people coming home with experiences that are hard to communicate. It is a great country and great world. You know, we have gifts despite a lot of the changes in our world today. You know, we'll figure it out. We'll make changes that we have to make. You know, I saw the energy for new energy when I was young. and kids sacrificed their lives. I mean, not young men and women, not kids, but in college. At Kent State, what a terrible sacrifice that was for both the National Guard that was called out to try to calm down an uprising against the war at Kent State, but also all those young people who were considered a possible threat because they had communities of students putting new energy to work, making deals with the electric company for solar power to be used, or hydrogen power for diesel engines, you know, and just stuff that didn't always work well with a community of farming and agriculture. And we've been through this before as a country. We weren't there back in the 20s and 30s with the changes going on with the, you know, desire to really make an aggressive work with agriculture. Well, sometimes you got to respect the earth and the climate and things that change. And, they took aggressive moves to save what was considered the Dust Bowl. I think we're all dealing with a big Dust Bowl right now. We have to really work on our gardens, as we say, with each of us with our own position with the world and our families and communities. And, you know, I saw so many incredible people coming together, of very, very different backgrounds and different cultures. And these demonstrations are right around where I'm in now, where I live now. Every street was packed. Was different than the statements trying to be made by the Occupy movement. They were very much in control, you know, and there was no knuckleheads running around screaming at police, being violent with that. They were in, they kept it in control for their statement they wanted to make. But this time it was many, many pretty much violent efforts that were out of control in many places, all over the world. Voices that wanted to be heard and didn't know what they want to say. I mean, you know, it's tough. And this is situation is like between parents and their children. What do you do? Sometimes you don't want to scream at them, you don't want to hit them, you don't want to get violent. But they just don't get how much we love them. And it's a growing process. And but we have good people, you know, out there involved, and they're going to grow with this together, I hope, more, whether they're whatever side they're on. You know, right now we have a lot of people even with similar desires, but they all have different situations. A lot of really poor people in this country, unfortunately. And, you know, they're doing their best. We have great education. It's difficult for people who really want to just make a buck, you know, to get through that area, and a lot of crime and other stuff. But we also got a lot of good people, of all sorts. You know, I've seen the growth in different communities that went from since I was a little boy, with people coming over from Europe to make their way here in this country and South America. And just, you know, this, a lot of people in the world want what we got. And, there's a lot of good stuff, you know, that we represent too. We have to stick by that, really that faith and the good stuff. I've seen, you know, just terrible individual moments of violence now in the news all over the country. And a lot of times it's God's will, not ours. We just got to, you know, start reaching out. My dad's huge hand would go out to men and people. He didn't talk a lot, but he made his effort to pull communities together and do things for the kids. And he went across the boundary. He went to other communities. He took us to visit other places as kids and meet people. I mean, he was 6'8". What was his favorite deal? Basketball. You know, and he'd go into communities, shoot baskets with people. He knew brothers and sisters and people in the, you know, outside of the white community. And he had served with many different kinds of people and a lot of real, you know, in his squad was people that he didn't really agree with a lot of their politics. Very southern kind of. They were racist, but when they were together after the training and basic training and taking that ship out to the islands, everybody was working for each other. He had nightmares about just trying to save some lives. He lost his squad. You know, he lost everybody. He was a gunner, toughest kid in the group. The pictures of him just standing like a foot taller than anybody else in the group. And he said a lot of these guys just, it broke his heart. You know, he didn't agree with them about a lot of their attitudes. He said, but shoot, you got to stick together, you know, and he did his best as a gunner.
I'm Bradley Trainer,
and I'm Don McClain. We have a podcast called Blinded by the Item.
A blind item is gossip about a celebrity with their name left out. It's a guessing game, and you can play along. The item might be like, this A-list star carries a Birkin bag worth more than the average person's house to the gym to work out.
Pretty sure that's J-Lo.
And P.S. the person behind all of this is Kris Jenner,
LLC. We drop a new episode every weekday so the fun never ends.
Blinded by the Item. Listen wherever you get podcasts and watch us on the Blinded by the Item YouTube channel.
You've been grappling with those themes your whole career. I mean, a lot of us remember the Deer Hunter, and I mean, other than maybe Best Years of Our Lives, that might have been the most powerful movie ever made on, you know, PTSD.
It was one of my favorite movies as a kid. I remember we had like an 8-inch screen little TV. We had like the first TV and ever made or something. A tiny little TV, and people, we would watch Eisenhower speeches, and I was a little boy, but I watched the reaction of the people in the room, you know. Well, police action, you know, that was a bad, what is this? What does that mean? You know, course, I mean, in my mind, people were asking questions. What are we doing? What's going on? Korea was a police action. We've had different changes, you know, in our military actions in the world. But service is service. And once you're in, you sign a contract, you know, you're there for to sacrifice yourself for purposes that are important for our whole country. And it's hard to figure out, you know. A lot of times it's, you know, it's in the hands of a power greater than ourselves, military especially. It gets a little weird, but I guess, you know, I never served, but I have been to hospital since I was a kid, VA, and sometimes just sitting with somebody is good, is important, just spend some time. And a lot of guys who come out, their character is grown. They've fought the devil with a lot of issues, and men and women. I mean, today, oh my God, you don't realize these commanding officers are women for 20 years. They've been going over that, and they've been in action. They've been in medics. They take over a squad in the middle of the night when a Humvee gets blown up or something. They get telling people what to do. There's no enemy. It's all, you know. Save this guy's life. Go get the bodies out of that burning Humvee. A lot of times it's women, young women. And they've been in for a long time now. This stuff has been going on for years with the action and all over the Middle East and South America, all over the place. And yet, you know, we have a lot to be grateful for.
You were talking about coming home. Why do you think it was so important that Michael structured Deer Hunter the way he did? You know, you have that long hour wedding set up, which is great, and all you guys.
It was a Russian community, Russian-American community. The story was taken from a true story, a book that was written and banned by the Communist Party. It had to do with post-revolution in Russia, and really devastating destruction to a lot of communities, and also the effect of war. I mean, a lot of people don't want to see people going through stuff in battle. I remember Second World War movies when I was a kid, and, you know, there was always heroes, but there was also those guys that, you know, were lost or injured, and those moments, some were brought out a little more touching than just the violence for the violence of violence itself. And this Russian Revolution was pretty bad. And yet the effect on a young man from a Russian-American community, I emphasize Russian-American, you know, going, they changed the script to make it work here. And we were going to film it in Hungary, actually, but as a Russian story, but the great producers picked it up from Andrei Konchalovsky and Nastasha were at dinner in Paris, and they said, "What is this?" And he said, "What are you all together for?" He says, "We'll take this movie to America. Here, sign this. Sign a napkin." And it, for me, it was indicative of a lot of stuff that is hard to show. Is America's got like 160 cultures in some counties, like Los Angeles. Well, I didn't think there was that many countries. But we got people with history and culture from all over the world. And they fight and serve for this country. We don't talk about the African Americans that fought for America in the Civil War. You know.
Right.
So this is what we are trying to figure out. And these peace marches in the last couple of days, for me it was coming home. You know, I love that movie. But this TV episodes, it was for me the most closest to home of where we are, of coming home, of people who total, even in the same family or in the same community, but needing to come together. What for? To just get to know each other, to shake hands and say, I hope we can stay in touch. You need anything, give me a call. You know, I never heard those guys what they talked about when they got shoulder to shoulder in the corner of a room. But maybe one guy who was coming back, wasn't a regular from the husbands and wives that may have gotten together there, and he may have come back from Korea or from recovery. And my dad took me. And I remember in that scene, like when we were arguing a little bit, me and AJ at the table, and Hannah had put that whole thing. It takes a woman. She put the whole thing together. And, you know, we're having trouble figuring out what to talk about. I still got the same old kind of BS that I want to bring up from the past. And he brings me right to now. You know, this is who he is now. And, but I'm not fighting. I'm not in the fighting spirit anymore. You know, I want to. He's grown up, and being grown up is not always a good thing to deal with. You know, he's got experiences and things he's got to deal with, and this coming together at that one scene. I mean, there's little moments sometimes in good TV. This is a good scripted show. Even those guys overseas when they get together, it brings moments out that are. That are enlightening to us here, back home, what they're dealing with over there, and how long they've been dealing, and how the changes are effective in not always a good way to the people that are dealing with it. And this, for me, is what I think the TV is bringing to us, is education, and I respect the writing. Anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I only have a few minutes left, but before we go, I mean, you've been mentioning, you know, what we've been seeing. How did, how influential was Do the Right Thing on you? You had that great scene where bugging out, you know, you step on his Air Jordans, and then you ultimately say, they say, go home, and you say, I was born in Brooklyn.
But it was a gift. It was a gift. Spike gave me a ring, and I was on my way back to South Africa, actually. And, and he said, well, we'll just put it together, this little scene. I hadn't started filming yet. And, you know, get some of the guys, the great, great cast together. And we'll just put this down in Brooklyn. We'll just do it. And I have old family roots in old Dutch Brooklyn. And it meant a lot to me. It was just one of those moments, you know, that was captured just brilliantly by a great, great writer, director, and just for me, it was just wonderful, you know, to be able to just that coming together thing, you know, and accepting people for who they are. But, you know, what do I get to say? I was born here. Yeah, so what? Yeah, great. Yay. So what? Now we're all here. So they were born here too, and this, I think those little moments of gems. Just a, it was a gem of a movie, and I've done a couple of films with Spike. I'm very proud of. And he came to South Africa too. I had great friends and old friends that I'd made there for years, and we're, you know, as a whole world, we can, I can, you know, act smart and try to point out all the negative stuff that everybody's going through with climate and farming and drought and pandemic. You know, what else? What's next? Well, this is life. We're going to deal with it. We're going to, and the, you know, the racism. Oh, it's sad. It's sick. And it's, hey, there's a lot of anger and disappointment and frustration. Everybody's got something. You know, we got to, you know, what do you got to come to the table? Like we didn't SEAL team, you know, we got to sit at the table. And I think we need maybe a good president like Hannah and the more in the TV SEAL team. I'd like to see Hannah and AJ get together. But she brought us together for that little get together there. It's a small thing, but it means a lot. I really respect the writers for that show and the directors. A lot of women directors were great.
Yeah. Well, everybody, it's SEAL team on CBS. I think it just wrapped, season 3, but you can find it on streaming, and you can check out John Savage in 4 episodes, I believe, as Emmett Gwynn, father of Sonny Quinn, and AJ Buckley's character. So everybody, check it out. John, thanks so much. Lots of stories there.
I appreciate the call. God bless you in Washington, D.C., and the community there. Great people. You got two real strong, but very different communities in that one area. And I respect them both. God bless. Take care.
Thanks so much for listening to Beyond the Fame with Jason Fraley. Our theme music is Scott Buckley's Clarion. Remember to give us a 5-star rating if you like what you hear. We'll see you next time.